it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hello there, you're listening to Steve Bloomer's Washing, the independent voice of Derby County. Thank you so much for joining us. Now, there may be some big tournament going on in the Middle East at the moment, but the League One juggernaut waits for no man, and the Rams' domestic campaign continues during the World Cup. Eight unbeaten in all competitions now. Thank you very much. Plenty of goals and some renewed optimism ahead of a mixed bag of fixtures to see out 2022. I'm Chris Parsons. How are you doing? Richard Cutcher's here as well. How are you, mate?
Yeah, very good. Yeah, bizarre time of year, isn't it? So you're talking about Derby and World Cup and football. It's all very
odd. It's very surreal. Very strange. Yeah. How much football have you managed to watch in the past week? How many hours have you put in?
Yeah, quite a bit. I work from home, and so I've kind of got the TV on in the corner, and I kind of peek over. And if it's a particularly good game, I find myself actually sitting on the sofa with my laptop on my lap. I've kind of seen at least a bit, I think, of every single game, and I've probably only watched a handful of full games. But yeah, it's been pretty decent football.
The four games in a day, it's a lot, isn't it? That's a lot of football in the waking hours of the day.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's a 10 a.m. start, and last game finishing at what, 9 p.m. is a long day of football. But yeah, someone's got to watch it, so we'll
yeah,
do
I mean, it's on, so why not watch it? Tom Martin's here as well. The geopolitics aside, mate, what's been your highlight from the actual football at the World Cup?
I thoroughly enjoyed today, actually, with the cacophony of goals in the early kickoffs. The most goals scored by African sides on one day, which is six. I thought the games today were brilliant if they weren't totally high in quality. I've also enjoyed Kylian Mbappe being a bit of a beast. It's one of those things where you hear about him like being this outstanding player, and then PSG might get knocked out in the Champions League. You see him every now and then like do some good stuff, but I don't tend to watch the French league, if I'm honest. And I think he's been excellent in the two games. So yeah, there's been lots of good stuff, lots of good goals, and quite a few upsets as well. And a disappointment, I would say, is Japan losing to Costa Rica, which if they'd have won that, they'd have knocked the Germans out, which could have been quite amusing for us.
I'll just add there as well, actually, in terms of my highlight, although, you know, as I say, I'll put aside kind of the geopolitics and the controversy around it being held in Qatar. What's been really refreshing, actually, is to see the Arab world really embrace the World Cup and see some great results from Iran against Wales and Saudi Arabia against Argentina. I thought that was fantastic. It was kind of like when South Africa hosted the World Cup, and you could feel like the whole continent was behind all the different African teams in that tournament. I think Ghana were the ones that went on and did something decent then, and it just feels like we've kind of brought a whole new region to the world game. It sounds a bit cheesy, but I thought the atmosphere and seeing a different type of football fan has actually been really fascinating.
Yeah, it's been great. And On a personal level, I know you minded the shop for me on the last pod. Thanks for doing that, Kutch, as I've miraculously managed to plan my maternity leave to exactly coincide with the start of the World Cup, which was accidental, I promise.
So full report then from you?
Yeah, so I've welcomed another little one into the Parsons family, which is great news for all concerned. Little Rowan, which is great. But yeah, on the plus side, it obviously means that I've just had loads of time to watch literally every single game, which has been great. But on the downside, haven't quite been able to stay awake long enough to watch all of it. And I think there were some of the, there were a few nil-nil snooze fests in like the first week, weren't there, in the groups. And I did literally fall asleep during some of them in about 4 o'clock because, you know, as Tom will tell you, your body clock gets flipped a bit upside down in those early weeks. But it's been all good. I think for me, like highlights wise, it's been a great tournament of upsets, hasn't it? Like a few great shocks early on, like Japan beating Germany and Saudi Arabia beating Argentina and Morocco beating Belgium. But like to extend on what you said there, Tom, like I think when you watch the World Cup, you always want to see like the big names do the business for their countries. And like I'd never really seen Messi do it for Argentina in on the tournament stage. I know you think he won the Copa America from a few years ago, didn't it, or quite recently, but that was a great World Cup moment, I thought, when he banged in the winner or the second goal or one of the goals against Mexico. That was a quality moment. And also a low-key highlight for me is that Christian Bielik hasn't yet got injured. So on a personal level, that's got to be a plus, hasn't it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Messi, you can tell you've got baby brain, Chris, and I can totally understand that one. Yeah, the first goal for Argentina against Mexico was absolutely outstanding. And I just think like some of the big players, even Ronaldo, he scored some good goals. He scored again tonight as well, or debatably scored again tonight, whether he got the touch on that first one. And it's just been a really good tournament. And I think you have to raise that awareness about the human rights issues. And there's been a few comments which I think are a bit unsavory from the head of the World Cup in Qatar, who I think is a Qatari national, who said that it's bad, that the One Love armband is divisive. It's not divisive. It's actually trying to bring people together. And anyone who opposes that, I think, is divisive. But that's sort of the political side, which we're not really focused on, as you say. And the football's been great, and I've got a couple of mates who are out there in Qatar, and they're having a really, really good old time. So yeah, fair play to them. And they've also taken on the Japanese spirit of clearing up after themselves, and they've been picking up bottles and glasses and stuff like that which have been left on the concourse. So nice to see a few England fans getting involved in that good-natured spirit.
Well, hours before Germany v Spain in Qatar on Sunday, of course, there was another titanic tussle between two teams from different nations in another historic competition. I think, Kutch, that's probably my most tenuous link I've ever pulled off on this podcast. But anyway, it saw Derby County put themselves in the hat for the FA Cup third round of a hard-fought win at Newport County over in Wales, thanks to an 88th-minute winner from David McGoldrick. Kutch, Paul Warne described the first half from Derby as disgusting, which is quite a colourful adjective to use. But we've got to admit, it ended up being one of our most probably contrasting performances under the new manager in the second half, didn't it, overall?
Yeah, real chalk and cheese game, to be honest, game of two halves, all those cliches. The first half was disgusting, but you know, going back to what you were saying about snooze fests, Chris, in the World Cup, I found the first half of the Derby versus Newport game a bit of a snooze fest. I think you even commented on the Discord that you were struggling a little bit to keep your eyes open in that game. It was only really their goal that kind of woke me up from kind of drifted off while I was watching it. Yeah, the first half was just a non-event from Derby's side. We were standoffish. When we did have the ball, we moved it too slow, but we often didn't have the ball, and they kind of just outran and were out physical, and we couldn't really spring two or three passes together ourselves. And to be honest, I thought Newport were good value for their goal. Yeah, at the end of the first half, I thought Derby were caught napping from a set piece. Cashin was caught underneath it, the ball coming in, but I don't think it was anyone to blame there. I think someone said it was Rooney's man. I might be wrong about that. So yeah, it wasn't particularly convincing. I'm not sure starting with a three at the back or a five at the back against Newport is really probably the way to have gone. I think he obviously got that wrong and corrected it, you know, in the second half, went to 4-4-2, and we just looked a completely different team, and we actually managed to get our good football players on the ball, and Newport ultimately couldn't live with them. So yeah, I guess it was a good positive way to finish the game, and to finish this really strange month of away games and cup games. It feels like we haven't played in the league for ages. So yeah, I think we're still unbeaten for quite a while now, and go into a really good string of five league fixtures in this month with a few full weeks in between games as well, which we welcomed.
Yeah, I agree with your summing up there, Kutch, and I think you've sort of analysed that quite sort of nicely. We haven't lost since we lost against Ipswich, which is well over a month ago, if you discount the penalty shootout defeat against Liverpool. And I think that's a real sort of like coming together of this squad, and you're starting to see some things like click together. Yes, Warne made an error perhaps in the setup for the first half, and I think Newport, without really doing too much, probably were deserving of their lead, but neither side had really had too many chances in that first half. But the second half, the way way Derby responded was fantastic, creating chance after chance. And we could have had three or four, I think, in the end. I think McGoldrick blocked off the line from Howerhan. I still haven't seen whether that was going in. Dobbin got through a couple of times. And again, late on in the last minute, I thought Barkhuizen was really lively as well, coming in off that left flank and had a couple of chances too. So I thought we were creating stuff, which is good in that second half. And it just we need to piece that together over 90 minutes against one of the top teams in League One. And I think we'll give a few teams a good hiding in the rest of the season.
Yeah, I think we'll probably talk more generally about the team in the second half, but I thought Barkhuizen was a real plus, actually, coming back from injury. And he had an impact as well away at Pompey on the Friday before. So it's really good with Nathaniel Mendes-Lang out currently. I think it's really good to see Barkhuizen back in the mix, and I'm sure he'll be pushing for a start on Saturday against Sheffield Wednesday, because he's had an impact twice now off the bench, and I think they've probably been able to ease him back in maybe and given that time. So yeah, he just seemed to bring on a little bit more quality to the team against Newport in that second half, which we were obviously crying out for. So good to, I think we're slowly starting to see bodies come back. You know, Jason Knight was on the bench. Paul Warren mentioned in the post-match interview that I think Mendes-Lang, Curtis Davis and Hayden Roberts are all close, who could be in contention for the weekend. So the squad's starting to look a bit more healthy. And I just checked though that unbeaten run, Tom, you said from the kind of October, yeah, 9 games unbeaten, lots of draws in there, but 9 games unbeaten is definitely something to build on.
Yeah, it's positive, really, that I guess we're still scoring goals and delivering without Mendes-Lang, who I think was scheduled for like 3 to 5 weeks out, wasn't he? So if he does come in at 3 to 4, that's a bonus, especially against, if he does manage to feature against Sheffield Wednesday. But if he could have chosen how that equaliser would have come against Newport, Tom, like Louis Sibley cutting in and banging one in on his right foot isn't really what any smart person would have put the money on, is it? But you got to give him credit. You got to give credit to Sibbo, because it was a really tasty finish and not really the sort of goal we've ever seen him score before.
No, I thought he played really well in that second half, and it just would love a bit of consistency from him. But it shows the quality that he's got. He sort of drifts past a couple of players out on the left hand side, and they're almost like, oh, it's not too dangerous. And I think two players sort of leave him, and then the centre back comes to half close him down, and he's just got a bit of space and he curls it in nicely. It's not a lot of pace on the shot, but I think the Newport will be disappointed defensively. But Sibley has to beat, as I say, two players out on the left hand side, and then curls it past the defender. It's a really good strike and a nice bit of technique, and yeah, that's really pleasing to see that he's starting to settle into that sort of left wing back role a little bit more than he was, because I think he was a bit anonymous in a few games previously. But yeah, really positive second half for him.
He doesn't score ordinary goals, does he, Kirch? I'm trying to think of the goals that Louis Sibley has scored. I mean, the thing we've always said about him is that he's been this great promising player, and that he needs to add goals to his game, and needs to chip in goals and assists, and I feel like he's done that a bit more this season. But he's still firmly in the category of not scoring very often, but when he does, they're generally worth waiting for, aren't they?
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I think you're right, Chris. I can't think of any Louis Sibley tap-ins or headers at the back post or bundling it over the line. Yeah, well-hit strikes, yeah, and often quite important goals as well. So yeah, he has got quality. We've always known that. It's just the consistency, as Tom touched upon there. He's just not consistent enough, which is why I think he's kind of ended up never holding down one role in the team. Like, he'll get the odd run out at number 10, but normally he'll be out wide. He's played a couple of games this season in the middle of the park where he's actually looked okay. I think it was away at Accrington he played particularly well in the middle of the park. Might be one of the other Northwest away games I often get mixed up between, but he's played left wing back and left back now a few times in the last few weeks, and to have mixed results. I thought Pompey, I think it was first half against Pompey, I was particularly unimpressed with his performance. And he still has moments in that position, but his passing's just not, he doesn't use the ball when he's deeper. He doesn't use the ball well enough, I don't think, to really trust him in that position. But the impact he had from the left-hand side on Sunday was, you couldn't really deny it, with the goal and with the assist, was a great ball in. And we know that Paul Warren wants people who are out wide to put really good first-time balls in. And for that winner for McGoldrick, he couldn't have put a better ball in.
You could probably say, Tom, that you could sense, I think, that the winner was coming. I mean, Derby had a couple of hairy moments towards the end against Newport. And I think there was one where a ball across the box went astray and Wildsmith had to pull off a terrific one-handed save coming off his line quickly. But when it did come, and I'm going to paraphrase a friend of the pod here, Jamie Page from Derby Retweets, who said that there's nothing better when it comes to a sound at a football than the sound of a ball connecting with a big bald head. And yeah, in this case, it was the big bald head of David McGoldrick at the back stick. How good is that header? Because it's not your classic towering header, is it? He has to do really well to adjust his body and just guide it and used the strength of the cross to just like use the momentum to carry it past the goalkeeper.
Yeah, as a forward, you sort of love those balls because it's just curling slightly away from the goalkeeper and the defender. So it's coming onto you as you're attacking it. And it's a really nice cross, a really juicy cross from Sibley with his left foot. And as McGold leaps into the air, you sort of see the eyes light up with it. And he absolutely powers the header past the goalkeeper. Because it's so powerful, he doesn't actually have to get it into the corner like you'd think that you'd need to get it into the bottom or the top corner from there. But actually, it's so powerful and he meets it so well, perfectly timed leap. And he showed all his experience there to send us through to the next round, which is fantastic. And as you say, that Jamie was absolutely right. It was a lovely sound off his head as he finished that one.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to have some bit of a chat later on about our own shouts for who's been Derby's best or most important player of the season so far, but give it a couple more goals and I think Didsy is in that conversation, you know, like seventh for the season. I mean, which maybe could be better, but it's his general play and it's not a coincidence that so many people who commentate on Derby like point out how classy he looks on the ball at times and how just that level of quality slightly above those around him that he brings. So maybe he's part of that as well, Kirch.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I think you're right. A couple more performances or a couple more goals, I think he should probably be in that mix because we just look a completely different team going forward. Actually, off the ball as well, we look a completely different team when he's on the pitch because he presses so well. I mean, we've had quite a few strikers. You know, obviously, Chris Martin's the obvious one, James Collins now, and a couple kind of flittering ones in between that have been good at holding the ball up and being back to goal. And McGoldrick does that but in a very different way. And he kind of pinches the ball off defenders and he often wins the ball from the defender with back to goal when you think he's got no right to do it. There's a couple of moments against Portsmouth in the first half where he was winning the ball against defenders kind of 50-50 loose balls, which he just thought he had no right to do. And then he's got the awareness and the touch to take a touch, make some space and pull someone else into the game. So he's an absolutely quality number 10. He's one of the best number 10s I've seen in a Derby shirt for quite some time. And he really delivers with a goal. So I think you're right. If he can just string a few more games together, it feels like he's only just starting to get a real consistent run in the team in the last maybe few weeks because he has been a bit in and out when he started the season late. But he's a huge player. He could definitely be, by the time of the end of the season comes, if he stayed fit and in the team, he could definitely be a shout for player of the season if he continues this form.
It's great to watch him because he does have those real moments of quality, like dropping deep, clever little turns, scoring goals, playing players in. But when he is like closing players down and running the channels, he mentioned in his post-match that he turned 35 this week. And I think he does look every day of his 35 years when he is doing the hard yards, if you know what I mean. But no, he's been quality. It's been a really good signing. But his goal, Tom, as I said, put Derby in the hat for the third round proper. We've been saved the embarrassment of not getting to the third round. Now we're in League One, which I think is a plus. And that third round draw is the glamour tie of Barnsley at home, which has been drawn literally in the past couple of hours as we record. Obviously not the juiciest of ties, given we've already played them and beaten them this season. But it always throws up that quandary, like, do you want a winnable game in the FA Cup or a glamour tie? I mean, we've had sort of both this season. We've had the glamour tie, we've had Liverpool away, which was an amazing night for the 5,000 who went and won for the memories of supporting this club, but didn't get anything from it, albeit only just losing on penalties. Whereas Barnsley at home, a very ordinary fixture, but we win it. I looked this up earlier. The winners of every third round tie get 100 grand and the winners of every fourth round tie get 120 grand. So, you know, look, I know we're debt free as a club now. Money isn't really as much of an issue as it was anymore, but like, we're not going to turn down almost £250,000 for winning two more football matches, are we?
No, I guess not. You've put in a nice positive spin on that. And then I just wonder how much 100 grand is going to make a dent in our weekly wage bill. I don't know. As we're probably paying what I think is a maximum of 8 grand we're allowed to pay. So, I mean, I've just been devil's advocate there on that one. No, it's a really boring tie. Come on, you can't try and gloss over this one. That it's a team in the same division as you. You've got through to the third round. You're like the bigger teams come in, and we've played Barnsley last season in the Championship. We've played them about three seasons in the Championship, and it's not even away from home, so you could take a decent following. It's just going to be a sort of dour 1-0 either way game. And hopefully we win it and go through into the fourth round. I mean, it would have been nice to have had a London club, as we've not been able to get to many games this season because of our respective children that have recently been born, Chris. But obviously only been the Charlton game away from home in League One. So it would have been nice to have had, like, I don't know, a Brentford or West Ham or or even maybe Gillingham and Dagenham and Redbridge, that would have been a good tie. But yeah, it's the FA Cup third round. It's always going to throw up some interesting ties, and there's some good looking ones in there, although I have to say it's probably not the best draw, and we'll have to hopefully get through and then wait for the fourth round for something a bit more interesting for us.
I think we're probably just a bit jaded with cup games at the moment as well. I mean, I completely agree, it's not a glamour tie. It's a bit like in the Championship when we draw West Brom, it's like, oh come on, like we're probably not going to win, and it's just kind of pointless when you're drawing against someone in your own league. So I understand kind of Tom's pessimism there, and we'd like to have a London away game for ourselves. But look, we've got I think five games in December all in the league, and maybe we'll feel a bit more ready for another cup game come January. And in terms of maybe getting a bigger glamour fixture, win the game against Barnes, then you've got a better chance of getting one. So no harm in getting a few rounds of the cup in there.
Yeah, and the victory over Newport came after, of course, the replay victory over Torquay at home, which we haven't really talked about since we last spoke to you all. The 5-0 thumping, of course, pretty regulation stuff, really, apart from, you have to say, Lewis Dobbin's stonking volley in the second half. Very quickly, Tom, before we go into the second half, how does that volley compare for you in terms of the best volleys ever scored by a Derby player at Pride Park? For me, it's top three. And in that top three is also, I would say, George Thorne against Brighton. And if you remember this one, Ian Taylor against Watford in 2003. Those are my standouts. How about you?
George Thorne against Brighton came straight to me because I was in the West Stand, pretty much in line with the edge of the penalty area. And it was just, you saw the ball drop into him and the way he moved towards the ball and then hit it. And it just dipped perfectly, and we had a great view from that from side on. I also quite liked Arturo Lupoli's back in 2007 against Colchester, although I don't think it's anywhere near the same level. And I'd forgotten, I have to say, about Ian Taylor's volley. So that was that's a good one. Can I put out Paul Pesci-Salido in the 4-2? It came off the Kenko Cup off Barry Roach, and then he volleyed that in. That's another great volley at Pride Park. But yeah, again, probably not in the same world as Dobbins. It's a fantastic technique and a great strike. As the cliche goes, I don't think two goalkeepers would have saved that.
What about, obviously Chris was going to say George Thorne against Brighton, because that gets into any conversation about a good Derby goal that Chris ever brings up, that George Thorne against Brighton for some reason is in every
single list. Got no fresh material.
And also, Kenny Miller's was a half volley, was it? Or, I mean, people can debate what half volleys and volleys are, right? But Kenny Miller's against Newcastle, was that on? That had bounced, right? That's not necessarily a half volley. I think it's still a volley.
It's not a half volley, but it's just about a volley, I'd say. I think
it was for about 85 yards.
Yeah, it was miles out. Yeah, yeah. That's part of the chat for sure.
But not better than George Thorne against Brighton,
well,
obviously.
No, of course not. The only reason, Tom, you don't remember Ian Taylor's is because highlights from that season are very scarce on YouTube, and the ones that do exist look like they've been filmed on a potato. So
Or on your phone,
Chris, from last week, yeah. Yeah, that was a bit of a clanger on my part, wasn't it? So yeah, some great shouts in there. But yeah, third round, here we come. But we're back to the league in Derby's next game against Sheffield Wednesday. And we're going to chat a little bit more about the season in general. Who's been most impressive for us in this Derby team? Who do we believe has been most important? But before we move on to that in part two, don't forget, of course, you can join SPW on Patreon this season to get more exclusive podcast content from us. You get an extra episode each month. You get a welcome pack, which includes beer mats and SPW stickers and merch. You can join our Discord group. And you also get to enjoy the incredible episode that is the Steve Bloomer's Washing Christmas Quiz, which will be our exclusive on Patreon for December. So if you're interested in all of that stuff and you fancy supporting the podcast going forward, then head over to patreon.com/Steve Bloomer's Washing.
Derby 3-0 up. Good turn. Carsley breaks clear. Carsley cuts inside, we'll have a shot, and we'll score! 4 goals now for Derby, in a frenetic ending. No wonder they can't believe it on the bench. 9 goals in 2 matches now for Derby County. And another home win.
Hi, I'm Paul Pesci-Solido, and you're listening to Steve Bloomer's Washing. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, or hit follow on SoundCloud.
How was Pompey then, Kutch? Fair play to you, heading all the way down to the South Coast on a Friday night, albeit from the Southeast anyway. But we've been before a few years ago, I seem to remember, about a decade ago. But was it similar good memories for you down there?
I've got family down there, so I stayed with my cousin for the weekend. I ended up dragging him to the game as well. He's not a Pompey fan, he's actually a Spurs fan, but he's grown up in Portsmouth, naval family, my dad's side of the family. So yeah, I combined it with a family visit, and yeah, it was a 0-0 game. I thought it was a pretty entertaining 0-0, to be honest. It was a real strange one because the first half I thought was fairly even in the play, but Derby created much the better chances and probably should have been ahead. You think of James Collins had a great header quite early on, McGoldrick hit the bar, that outstanding volley, and of course Craig Forsyth somehow managed to conspire to miss at the back post. And to be honest, my view was so bad in that game. We were literally about three rows from the front, right behind the goal in the Derby end. So when Forsyth missed that chance, I had absolutely no idea what had happened until Tom had told me after the game, and I found some highlights to watch. And in the second half, Derby just, I thought, lost all control of the game. And for about 25 minutes, I was convinced we were going to concede, even though Pompey never actually opened us up at all. We couldn't seem to get hold of the ball. We couldn't string two passes together. We were second to every 50-50. But then we finished the second half really strongly, and we probably should have won it again at the end of the second half. So Derby had much the better chances. I thought Cashin had a great chance right at the end. Louis Sibley was put through from, I think it was from McGoldrick, after a neatly worked corner, and probably should have done better getting his shot off. So yeah, I think it's a good point away at Pompey, but probably should have been free.
The thing I love the most about that overview, which are very well summed up, by the way, is that the Craig Forsyth chance, which you didn't really realise or remember, you actually filmed and sent over to us. And I'm pretty sure it's exactly the chance that you didn't have a clue what was happening. But I was like, it's literally there. You've just filmed it. But yeah, I thought Derby played well. It's a really good away performance. We looked solid at the back. Their shot on target, I think, came in that 92nd minute or something. It was outside the box and was comfortably smothered by Wildsmith. We created quite a few chances. Obviously, Dizzy almost scored an absolute worldie of a volley. Cashin had a good chance, which obviously wouldn't go down as a shot on target, but he should well have scored 8-9 yards out in the last minute. So a good away point. And on reflection, you might think that Derby could have gotten nicked 3 points. But I think if you're drawing your away games at places like Portsmouth and then you're winning your home games, you're going to be in a good position to be mounting a playoff charge. And that's what Derby look like. They're starting to piece together.
Yeah, what I really liked about the performance actually in general was that I don't think we played brilliant like in open play. Like, we weren't cutting them open, but we did create chances. Like, as we said, we had some really good chances. And if we do kind of put those performances together, we'll definitely win more than we lose away from home if we can play like that. Because Pompey didn't play great. They did get booed. There was boos at the end of the full-time whistle. And I think they'd be on not a great run at home. But they're a good team. They got some decent players in there. And I just thought we made them look... We let them have the ball quite a lot, but they didn't really do anything with it. It was a really odd game. A part of the game, I thought we were atrocious, but as I said, we created much the better chances, three or four really good chances. And yeah, I think it was very promising considering the month that squad had and the amount of injuries in the squad. I just thought it was a very impressive all-round performance, really.
Seems a good time at this point to take stock on the season so far then. Like, we're what, about 25 or so games, if not a bit more, in all competitions into the season. I think I said at the start that we're like 8 unbeaten. I don't think I counted the Liverpool game in the middle of that, but anyway.
Yeah, 9 including Liverpool.
We're on a pretty good run, but yeah, 19 in the league and a fair few games in the cup as well. And we sort of put it out there, like, who has been your Derby County player of the season so far? And it's really interesting that almost all of the responses I got on Twitter, which was more than 50 people who actually replied, were all just one of the same three players, which is convenient for us as the three of us. So it was Joe Wildsmith, Aaron Cashin and Nathaniel Mendes-Lang. I mean, I'll go first with Cashin, who I think has probably edged it for me. Like, you look at how he's come into the side this season, may not necessarily have been first choice on paper when you look at who else we have in that squad, but cast your mind back to Blackpool away when he scored, and like this time last season when he was still a relative unknown, really. I think he's definitely Derby's most improved player this season or over the last 12 months. And look, it's so hard not to enjoy the way that he plays. Like, he's like all action, he's committed, he's brave, he puts his body on the line, but he can play a bit as well. I mean, I'm not going to go as far as, I think I saw someone compare him to Dave McKay after his debut, which I'm steady on. But look, he's got something about him, and we've said that on the pod before. Like, he's got a decent touch, he's got a bit of awareness, he can pass the ball, and he's got the raw physical attributes you want from a defender. And he sort of leads by example in the way that he heads it and kicks it, and as I said, throws himself in front of everything. Basically, I'm not going to say that he's perfect. He has made mistakes this season, like got sent off against Torquay, even got caught out a bit in the goal against Newport, got caught out for one of Plymouth's goals at Pride Park earlier this season. But, you know, look, which of our players in our squad have been perfect? Because if they were, they wouldn't play in League One, would they? We've said that all the time. But I think if you look at how, if you're talking about how players have developed, if you're talking about how players have been received by the fans, and if you're talking about the contributions they've made and how good they could become, I feel that Cashin has been the best of the bunch for me. But Kutch, you've got another name in the back line who's your shout, haven't you?
Yeah, I think Joe Wildsmith. I just think he's been the constant. Cashin has also been a constant, I guess, apart from his suspension. But Joe Wildsmith's been an absolute constant. He seems to just be getting better and better the longer the season goes on. Oh, I think one of the reasons between the unbeaten run in the last nine is the amount of clean sheets he's kept, including at Anfield, which was a fantastic goalkeeping performance, even at Newport on Sunday. Made a really good save from a 1-1. I'm not sure if it was when it was 1-0 down still or if it was at 1-1. When he made that 1-1 save, really strong hand to palm it away from the players he was going for on goal. And he's commanding. Like, I saw it at Pompey. He's starting to really come and claim crosses and corners and come out quite far and quite aggressive to come and get them. And he's seemed to got safe hands. And I think he's just seen probably the results of a goalkeeper who has always struggled to pin down a number one spot, or is maybe he's one of those goalkeepers that comes in and then when the number one's back, he's just dropped out again. And he's been given the number one shirt, and I think he's relishing play under Paul Moore.
Well, do you remember, Kutch, how when we went to Stevenage in pre-season, how ropey he looks in that game?
Yeah, I think to be honest, I think the main criticism people levy at him, which I think is fair, is his distribution isn't great and he's not that confident with his ball at his feet. And obviously under Liam Rossini, he really wanted the goalkeeper and the back line to really be comfortable and play the ball at their feet. And I do think that when goalkeepers who aren't comfortable doing that are asked to do it, it does impact other parts of their game, because they're probably overthinking and nervous in general because they're going to be asked to play more of their feet, and that's just not their game. And I think maybe the new Warne era has kind of simplified things for him. Warne has said in interviews since that he likes the goalkeepers to come out and be positive claiming crosses, and Wildsmith has been doing that. So I think there's very few goals that have gone in when he's gone, he could have done a bit better there. I mean, it was one or two in the first couple of months of the season, but really over the last two or three months he's been faultless. I think he just gives the whole backline a lot of confidence.
Yeah, well, there's plenty of people who agreed with you on that one, Kutch. A few people on Twitter who tweeted us at Steve Bloomerpod. Mark Smith, he said, Wildsmith is player of the season by a mile. Confidence breeds from the back for the rest of the team. They have one less thing to worry about, so can play with freedom. This results with high individual performances. And Leighton McNamara said on Twitter, for me, it is Wildsmith. In pre-season, he looks exactly like a keeper who hadn't played many minutes, but he's grown into the role perfectly and made some game-changing saves. Tom, I can smell something, and I think it's the enormous humble pie that you've presented in front of us as you give us your selection for player of the season.
I don't know what you're talking about, Chris. I've always backed Nathaniel Mendes-Lang. I think he's a great player.
Come on, spit it out.
I did doubt him. I did think that he wasn't the right signer. I've said that a few times already on the pod, and I think I've gone back on my word on it. But I think he's really direct. He's exciting to watch. He's the sort of player that goes and does a step over and tries to beat a player, and he's not the sort of person we've had at the club for a long time who would generally go with pace and also with a bit of skill and trickery to excite the crowd. And he does need to be a bit more like damaging with his crosses. I think sometimes he's a bit, he overhits them or underhits them and can give the ball away, especially early on in the season. But he's created chances for players, and he's got assists for goals, and he's also scored a few great goals as well. So he's really come on this season, and he's absolutely been a breath of fresh air. And it seems that like when he's on fire, Derby are a real threat, because there's lots of things going on in front of him. And I think Collins is a threat as a big guy up top, and we haven't seen the best of him, as you mentioned McGoldrick as well, is starting to chip in with goals. And I think if Mendes, Lang, Sibley even, then you've got Howerhan and in behind, like that's a dangerous front five that you're maybe talking about. And there were more players in that who are threatening at Derby. So Mendes, Lang has been absolutely excellent. And I really hope that he keeps it up. And I hope he continues to be as consistently had been over the first half of the season.
Yeah, and Tom, there's a few shouts that came in for NML as well on Twitter. We had at DCFC Stephen, who said, "I would edge towards Mendes Lang. I think he's our most important player. The amount of work he puts in every game is quite something. Funnily enough, he was the one summer signing I really wasn't sure about." At DCFC Stephen, is that your burner account, Tom? That sounds exactly what you said. At Cozzy 1973, he said Mendes Lang by country mile, works his knackers off every game. And Kane Tag said NML, every time he subbed, we miss his spark and an outball to give our slow defence a rest.
Yeah, I think my only comment about Nathaniel Mendes-Lang, and I love him as well, is he won't win player of the season if he's played as a right wing back. And he shouldn't be played as a right wing back. If Paul Warren wants to play with right wing backs, he's got to find another way to get Mendes-Lang into that front line, because he's completely wasted there. And I think Mendes-Lang himself has said that he's struggled for consistency at previous clubs. And I think in the early part of the season, he was saying that he was re-enjoying it in Derby and he felt like he could be consistent here. I really think that eventually we will kill off that enthusiasm and that consistency if he plays at right wing back. I think we've already seen that he can be dangerous from there, but he's had much more flittering in and out games because he's kind of stuck a bit too deep when he has played there. So I just hope that we can play him in a 4-2-4 or in a 4-3-3 more often than not this season, or in a 4-2-3-1, whatever. Just not, please, at right wing back, because I do think he'll be wasted. He won't get player of the season playing there.
Time for something completely different now. No midweek game for Derby this week, so we've got a bit more time to do something silly on the podcast, which we do pretty much every week anyway. But we're going to circle back to the Newport game, which we talked about in the first half. We have the theme for this week's quiz. So Richard Kutcher, play that funky music. Oh, I've missed that. Yes, it is win, lose or snore, the Derby County results-based guessing game. I'm in the chair this week and it's Kutch against Tom. Very simple. Five Derby games from yesteryear, and whoever guesses the correct result, a win, a loss or a snore, in tribute to Derby's late 90s German left back, wins the quiz. It's very, very easy when you think about it. So the theme, as I mentioned, Newport for you gents on this episode, is Welsh away days. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, that's gonna be tough for me.
I mean, it's a relatively small pool, surely. So, you know, there's only about three teams I can really mention and three teams that I have mentioned. So laser focus, you know, focus in on the two teams that you can think of from Wales, because chances are it'll be about one of them. Tom, are you ready?
Absolutely.
Kutch, are you ready? I'm guessing not, but let's do it anyway.
Yeah, well, notoriously bad at remembering anything, so let's see.
Okay, result number one on Win, Lose or Snore Welsh Away Days special is Cardiff City away on August 25th, 2003. That's Cardiff away in August 2003, so the 03-04 season. In the early days there, that's question one. Question number two, Swansea City away. You can see the pattern here. April the 9th, 2022. That's Swansea away, April the 9th, 2022. So Swansea away last season. Question number three, I'm going to stick my neck out and say this will be a complete guess from both of you, but it is Wrexham away on April the 3rd, 1982. That classic. I'm sure you all remember it well.
A league game or a cup game?
That, but I'm pretty sure it was league in the old Division 2. Question number four, Cardiff again. Cardiff away on January 31st, 2015. That's Cardiff away in January 2015, in the 14-15 season. And finally, Swansea City away on February 8th, 2020. Swansea away on February 8th, 2020. Have you both got five answers?
Yep, all five are genuine guesses.
Yep, me too. I could go either way with this.
I like it. It's wide open, as these games should be. So, Kutch, I'll go to you first. Cardiff City away, August 25th, 2003. Win, lose or schnorr?
I went win.
I've gone schnorr.
It was a loss. So, no points for both of you. It was Cardiff City 4, Derby County 1, in a game that I think was on Sky, because I watched it in a rubbish pub in Burton. And the goal scorers for Cardiff included Robert Earnshaw and James Collins. Not that one. Derby's goal scorer was Matthias Svensson, who we tend to mention on this podcast from time to time. First meeting in 17 years, that game was, for Derby and Cardiff. So, 0-0. Swansea City away, April 9th, 2022. Tom, win, lose or schnorr?
This is really bad. I'm struggling to remember when I got the right season, so I'm going to go loss.
Yeah, I went loss just because we lost so many games away from home that season, but it could have been a schnorr, but I've said
2-1
loss.
2-1 maybe?
The result was Swansea 2, Derby County 1. It was indeed a loss, so a point each for both of you. I went to that one, made a four-hour journey to Swansea, and we're 2-0 down after 14 minutes. So, question three, one or one apiece. Wrexham v Derby in 1982. What are you thinking, Kutch?
I just went for a schnorr because I thought I should put a schnorr down.
Did exactly the same. I was, I went schnorr as well.
You'll be pleased to know it was Wrexham 1, Derby County 1. So you both got it right. Well done in the old Division 2. So two apiece. Question four, Cardiff City away, January 31st, 2015. Tom, win, lose or schnorr?
This is another tough one. I'm going to go loss.
Yeah, I went win on this just because it's before February and we were okay in this era. But Cardiff were also okay in this era.
It's interesting. The result was Cardiff City 0, Derby County 2. So Kutch has pulled away in front.
Nice one.
Goals from Chrissy Martin. And to rub salt into the wound, Tom, Derby's other goal was a Scott Malone own goal for Cardiff.
Oh,
incredible stuff.
That doesn't surprise me at all.
And finally, Kutch, 3-2 up, 1 to play. Swansea away on February 8th, 2020. Kutch, you go first.
I put a loss.
I've got a win.
Ooh.
The result of this one was Swansea City 2, Derby County 3. So Tom's equalised.
Oh, Tom Lawrence.
It was, where Tom Lawrence scored the winner in one of the last, I think it's at the beginning of the five-game winning run under Koku across lockdown between before and after behind closed doors. Gents, the tiebreaker. According to Google Route Planner, if you were to go by car from Derby to Cardiff, how many miles is that distance-wise? Kutch, you can go first. I'll give you a clue if it helps. You're going via the M42. No, but it doesn't help, does it?
This is embarrassing because it's just now we're going to be so far off. Ugh, good Lord. To Cardiff, you say, or Swansea?
Derby to Cardiff via the M42, and the journey takes 2 hours and 50 minutes in a car.
I'll go 180 miles.
180 miles. Is that your final answer?
Yeah.
Tom?
I was going to go 162.
162. Well, according to Google, the distance in miles from Derby to Cardiff in a car via the M42 is 153.1 miles.
Close.
So Tom's next hit. A respectable guess from both of you. Did you just take the scenic route in the Tesla, Kutch, to find a charging point on the route?
Yeah, I was baking in the extra miles to and from the service station. Yeah.
Well, in that case, well, I'll give you a, we'll call it honourable draw, but Tom has nicked that one. So I enjoyed that. I need to think of more distance-based tiebreakers, but we will return in a couple of weeks if we can plan it around our various childcare arrangements when Derby have played Sheffield Wednesday. And who have we got after that? Is it Forest Green after that? I can't even remember.
No, Burton Albion, Forest Green, Bolton, Cambridge. That's December.
You think we know these things, but there has been a World Cup on, so that's our excuse. But Richard Kutcher, thanks for joining us.
Yes, always good fun. Thank you very much.
Tom, I'll leave you to return to your respective childcare arrangements. Thanks for coming on, man.
Brilliant. All the best.
See you soon.